And hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is Direct Impact. Also, this is what we're going to be talking about.
Today, Ireland, Norway, and Spain are announcing that we recognize the state of Palestine.
The prime ministers of Spain and Ireland and Norway thumbing their nose at Israel and the United States. And you're going to hear why. They explained it. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do it. So, yeah, we're going to begin this show with a somewhat startling announcement that is making the Israeli government of Bibi Netanyahu and the United States State Department furious. I mean, furious. Three countries have suddenly just come out, and together, in a joint news conference, no less, they are defying both the United States and Israel by calling for the immediate establishment of a free Palestinian state. Now, I'm going to play for you the statements that were made by the prime ministers of both Spain and Norway back to back. Here we go.
The time has come to move from words to action, to tell the millions of innocent, suffering Palestinians that we are with them.
The Palestinians have a fundamental, independent right to their own state. Both Israelis and Palestinians have the right to live in peace in their respective states. There cannot be a two-state solution without a Palestinian state.
He goes on to say, there can never be peace in the Middle East without a Palestinian state. Those are really important words. Those are really important words, because I think everybody who could think properly would agree with him, right? But this is a big deal for other reasons. It's because most of you know who watch my show regularly, and thank you so much to all of you who do all over the world. You know that we regularly talk about this, how the world has divided among global lines, right? I mean, there's the West, obviously led by France and the Brits and the United States. In other words, the old colonial guard. And then they tend to agree on backing Israel at all costs. In fact, those countries tend to agree on most things. And then there's the global South, right? They're led by India and China and Russia and South Africa and Brazil and Iran and even Saudi Arabia to a certain extent growing into that area. And it's a growing list of other countries who all tend to agree more than they disagree. So it's the West and the global South. That's what's happening in our world right now. Unfortunately, in the United States, nobody reports this. Nobody even knows this is happening, but it's important. And here's why this becomes important. Lately, we've seen a real fissure emerging between the Western countries, a little bit of a separation, a gap, right? This is a good example of that. I mean, here's Ireland and Norway and Spain literally thumbing their noses at Washington and the Israeli government. You wouldn't expect that. The U.S. says they're wrong and they shouldn't be doing this. They're mad. Washington's mad. Netanyahu is furious. And who better to speak for both of them? Lindsey Graham. Ah, yes. The so-called tough guy senator, known for his fake accent and his fake lifestyle.
These are allies, but they need to hear from a friend. What you did is reprehensible. To my friends in Ireland, Spain, and Norway, what you did was reward Hamas. Here's the message you're sending. Kill Jews and you'll get a reward.
Yeah, so you know what he's really saying? Are you hearing what he's saying there? I mean, according to Lindsey, you can't give Palestinians a state because they're all terrorists. That's what he's saying. He's saying if you give them a state, you're rewarding terrorists, right? So, you know, every single one of them, the grandmothers, the babies, all the people in Palestine, all the people in Gaza are terrorists, says the man who lives a secret life. Manila, I'm bringing you in. This is kind of an interesting reaction from him. I see you smiling. I don't know why. Maybe it's because of what I just said at the end. But you say what?
Well, first, I can't speak to whatever his personal lifestyle is, but I will say if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, then it's a war hawk. But starting May 28, that is when Spain, Norway, and Ireland will officially make their recognition official on paper. We should note that seven members of the 27 member states in the European Union already officially recognize Palestine as a state. Five of them are former what we would call East Bloc countries, some of them going as far back as 1988 in recognizing Palestinian as an independent state. Sweden, in 2014, they had already said that they recognize Palestinian or Palestine as a state. And remember, they are the newest members into NATO. So this, Rick, I think shows a lot of fractioning in this, you know, NATO EU membership, because there's a lot of overlap.
It's a big deal. You're absolutely right. And if I was to show you a map of the world right now, and you could probably find it, you would see that most of the Global South community is long ago decided that Palestine deserves to be a country and deserves to be a state. Well, we're now seeing
140.
140 of them. See? Thank
140 you. Countries, Rick, out of 190 roughly in the world.
That's amazing. Thanks for once again being ahead of me on that, Manila. All right, so let's talk about this now. There's a new study out there. It was published by Axios. Found it as I was surfing last night with my wife, no less. And this thing is catching fire on the internet. What it reveals about young Americans and what they say about their country, our country, who live here in the United States, compared to what their parents and their grandparents think, this is remarkable. Look at this. All right, put it up. Look at this. When older Americans, that's like people like me, aged 59 to 70, were asked if they believe in America, if they're still patriotic, 76% said yes. They still believe in America. They're still patriotic. Then they ask the same question of Gen Zers, people 18 to 26. Only 32% said the same. That's crazy how different that is. Now look at what they said when they were asked if the U.S. is the best place in the world to live in. Older Americans asked, is the U.S. the best place to live in the entire world? Well, 66% said yes. I want to live in the U.S. I don't want to live anywhere else. But look at Gen Zers. Only 33% said they think they live in the best country in the world. Look, I expected there was going to be a disparity, but I mean, this is a deluge between these two groups. Manila, what do you think of this?
Well, I mean, part of that is the youth is partially inexperienced in life as far as saying the U.S. isn't a wonderful place to live. I have lived overseas, and I'm part of the Gen X generation that everybody forgets about. They just talk about boomers and the Gen Z. But the older you get, you kind of have more appreciation for where you live. But is the United States a perfect place? Of course not.
Yeah.
I think there were some other important measures that these polls did, especially talking about the economy, which obviously millennials got screwed with the housing boom and then bust, and now the Gen Zers are also getting screwed with a terrible economy as they're graduating college.
Think about this. Our grandparents in the United States used to have one salary, and with one salary, they owned their own home. They often had a second home, like a little lake cottage or something. They usually owned their own car, and they went on vacation two or three times a year. Try doing that today. Try being a 25-year-old with a new family who graduated from college 5 years ago and try to do that today in the United States. It's impossible. The numbers just don't add up. So you're right.
Rick, you mentioned 20, 25 and married. That's also on the decline here in the United States, whereas marriage was viewed more favorably in the older generation. The younger generation here in America no longer wants to have babies, no longer wants to get married in the first place. So for a lot of people, I think you can look at this and more broadly say that this polling kind of shows that the American dream is dead.
Yeah, yeah. Dead or certainly on life support.
Yes.
Hey, I want to show you a Reuters report that crossed recently. Here it is. I think we can put this up as well. Look at this headline. Apparently, the EU is formally adopting a plan to steal the profits from Russian central bank assets that they froze back in February of 2022. They say they will take those windfall profits that don't belong to them, by the way, and guess what they're going to do with them? They're going to give them to Ukraine. So they're going to take the money from Russia that doesn't belong to them, but they're just going to freeze it and take it, just like when the Bank of England took the Venezuela's gold and said, "Nah, it belongs to us now." A senior Russian diplomat has come out and responded to this. He's kind of taken the high road, because you'd think he'd be more angry. He's denouncing the plan by essentially saying, go ahead, but sooner or later, you are going to have to return to Russia what belongs to Russia. He goes on to say, what has been stolen is the word he uses from Russia. This does beg the question, doesn't it, Manila? How can one country take the assets of another country and then hand it over to a third country? That just seems crazy on its face, no matter your reason.
Well, I mean, it's either just plain old theft, or one might call it piracy. But listen, Rick, this will serve to further disrupt the U.S. financial system, or the Western financial system more broadly. This is going to shake foreign investor trust in the U.S., in Western banking. As you said, if we hearken back to just 2022, what the Bank of England did, refusing to return $1.62 billion worth of Venezuelan gold because they say they don't recognize Nicolas Maduro as the president in favor of Juan Guaido, this just shows the arbitrary nature of Western banking and how it's been politicized, then later weaponized against those they deem its enemies. So if Western banking doesn't separate itself from political decisions like this, I'm afraid this is going to spell disaster for the rest of us who live in the Western world, especially as BRICS nations develop their own system of currency, and that's going to counter the euro. It's going to weaken the U.S. dollar as
that's
the reserve currency du jour.
That's well said. I also like the way you tried to ungringa yourself by saying Nicolas Maduro. So well done there. Hey,
I'm not a gringa. I'm a brown face.
You live in America, you're a gringa. Sorry. Thanks. Hey, have a fantastic weekend. By the way,
thanks, Rick.
When we come back, we're going to be taking you to Tehran to hear from a popular podcaster and researcher about what's going to happen there after the death of their president. You heard about his helicopter crashing, President Raisi. So Sotera Sadaki is going to join us here next. Don't go away.
To shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
So, welcome back. Let me tell you about my next guest. She hosts a popular podcast. It's called Twice Told Tales. She's also a researcher at the University of Tehran. Sotera Sadaki is good enough to join us. Thank you, Sotera, for taking time to talk to us today.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So it's been a rough week. We reported it as breaking news when it happened. It seems very curious. The president's helicopter going down in the fog. What's been the reaction there in Iran? And what do you expect this will change or not change in terms of the government of Iran?
Well, the people, the nation has been receiving the news with grief and shock. Even a lot of people who did not even vote for him or did not necessarily agree with some of his policies, especially in economy, because of what the nation has been going through in terms of economic hardship, partly due to sanctions, but also because of mismanagement inside Iran. But they regarded him as an honest and hardworking president who was very selfless and wanted to work hard to bring a better better conditions for the nation. I attended the funeral in Tehran and actually talked to, other people who were attending the funeral. And A couple of people that I talked to who were from the working class said that they felt they have lost their father or a very dear family member. And there were people who were crying and weeping the passing away of their president. And it was very shocking, obviously, because we lost both our president. Yes.
I would imagine. I mean, you know, it's funny, as I watch this and as I listen to you, it makes me think of how different the reality of Iran must be from what most people in the West perceive, especially here. I mean, you're speaking to me from Tehran, and here I am in the United States of America, where we are bludgeoned with information about everyone in Iran is a terrorist, everybody there is miserable, the government is horrible, people are unhappy. I mean, they make this picture that's so dismal, it can't possibly be true. Can you just, for the sake of our own enlightenment and edification, help us understand what it's like to live in Iran?
Well, I would recommend everyone to try and visit Iran. And I have friends coming from Europe, from America, from Latin America, from Australia, New Zealand, China, Russia, and everywhere to come. And everyone tells a story, the story of how they were surprised, how they were positively shocked that the things that they had heard was very different from the realities on the ground. But apart from that, they can also maybe watch my YouTube channel and our podcast, because that's what I try to do, to offer a very different perspective of what's going on in Iran. And there are Iranians on social media, including Instagram, including X, or formerly Twitter, that are talking about the realities on the ground, and people can follow them. And apart from that, there are, for example, travelers. I know at least two American travelers and travelers from other countries who have, like, they have traveled around the world, and Iran has been one of the destinations that they have visited. And they're saying that it's so underrated, and it's just so different from everything that they have heard on mainstream media about Iran. But apart from that, we're just human beings, right? Like everybody else in the world, and we're living our normal life.
What about women? What about for women? I see pictures of Iran, and you see pictures of malls, and you see young people out there hanging around and dating and dancing and having parties. And most of the time, I see pictures of women, some of them who choose to cover their heads and others who don't choose to cover their heads. They do have the choice. They do have the choice, right? It's not like there's no police out there, right?
I mean, there are cases where the police would talk to, like, stop people to tell them that they need to observe a dress code, but it really depends on the culture of that area. I can't say that it's right, like, there is no policing of the dress code, but it's for example, in my city, because I'm originally from Isfahan, the city is conservative. There are maybe a couple of places that you would see the police standing and telling people. And the thing that they do is they walk to people and tell them that they need to observe a dress code. But apart from that, like, as you said, you walk in the malls, on the streets, in coffee shops, I don't know, a lot of places, and especially during the past few years, you see people that are not even covering their heads and nothing happens to them.
Yeah.
So it's a, you know, it's not a monolithic society, and we have people who want to wear it, people who don't want to wear it, but because they think it's part of the culture, and, like, they want to, you know,
that's interesting.
Dress almost similar to other people in the so that they don't stand out, because there are areas the majority would wear it. But yes, we have women riding bicycles, working as professionals. 70% of our university students are women. Women are in the parliament, in the executive branch. Women are judges, are lawyers. doctors, athletes. We have women who have won medals in international competitions.
That's funny. The story. What you are saying, and the story we are told by Hollywood, and by our politicians and by our media, are two completely different stories. It's too bad that we live in a world where, especially us as Americans. I mean, my gosh, we are so kept in the dark about so many things in this world, and that's why it's so important to try and have a global perspective as we try to present here on this show on a daily basis. Let me ask you about, you mentioned social media. As soon as the president's helicopter went down, I mean, the social media and the Googles, as we like to say, the internet exploded with everybody immediately saying, oh, this had to be Israel, this had to be Israel, or maybe even Israel with the help of the United States. And maybe it's because it was, after all, a Bell helicopter, which is made by the United States. There's all kinds of stories out there. I have not seen a shred of evidence that proves that there was anything involving foul play, that this may have just been a helicopter going down. But for some reason, that seems to be the scuttlebutt. Is it the same? Are you hearing the same things there in Iran?
Yeah, actually, there are people who are talking about how it could be Israel. There are people who actually say it with confidence, not because they have evidence, but because they know the history of Israel and the U.S. hostilities against Iran. Israel has assassinated our nuclear scientists. Israel has worked with the CIA to train the most notorious terrorists inside the U.S. to just carry out assassinations of our nuclear scientists. Israel and America have armed and funded terrorist groups against us. Israel has attacked our embassy in Syria. I mean, there is just all sorts of hostilities that Israel has carried out against Iran and Iranian nations. So why not point the finger to Israel when you're not sure? But as you said, so far there is not really evidence what exactly happened. Investigations are going on, and there are a number of factors that make people speculate that there is foul play or chances of sabotage or assassination cannot be totally ruled out. Among those factors, I can refer to the fact that Aliyev, the Azerbaijani president, is an Israeli asset. He is a staunch ally of Netanyahu. Israel and the U.S. have a significant presence in Azerbaijan. There's also the fact that, for example, a couple of Israeli official accounts started talking about assassination or celebrating within the first hours that we were hearing that there's like hard landing and the steel. We were not even sure what has happened, but they were tweeting and celebrating the death of the Iranian president. There's also this, the founder of FDD, Mark, I forgot the last name, he tweeted that there is evidence. I mean, he's saying that there is evidence that some dissident groups inside Iran might have been involved in an assassination attempt, which looks like more like cover up for Israel. But at this point, we don't really.
I think conjecture at this point would not be responsible, certainly not from a journalistic standpoint. Nonetheless, we know that the palaver is out there. We're down to about a minute and a half, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about your thoughts on the situation right now in Gaza, what Israel has been doing. It would seem to me that, you know, Israel was in a pretty good place, perception-wise, worldwide, up until this moment. Iran was not. I almost think they're kind of trading places, perception-wise, globally, in the last since October 7th. Do you agree?
Well, I think after the Al-Aqsa operation against the Israeli occupation in Gaza and the siege against Gaza, we have for more than 75 years, we have been witnessing the crimes of the State of Israel against Palestinians, not only actually Palestinians, but Syrians, Lebanese, Iranians, even Americans. I mean, American taxpayers are paying for all these crimes that are being carried out and committed in Palestine. But after what happened on October 7, and there was uprising from the resistance groups in Palestine, the narrative, as you said, started to change because there were so many lies Israel was telling everyone, and they were exposed, and there were journalists reporting on social media live from whatever was happening in Gaza, and nobody can turn a blind eye to the genocide that is going on. And no matter how Israel tries to cover up, people will understand. We're seeing unprecedented like student protests in the U.S., Jewish community rising up against the state of Israel. So yes, the perception is changing, and it's not benefiting Israel. And we're seeing that
even here,
countries like Iran, who support Palestinians and Palestinian resistance, and who are against the genocide, receiving a better and more positive perception.
Yeah, I'm kind of seeing that as well, and it's flipping that way, and I think it's probably because of some of those actions. And by the way, you have been an absolute delight to talk to. Thank you so much. You're smart. You've got a great personality. You're easy to talk to. And I thank you for taking time to share your story, and good luck with your podcast. Give us the name of it one more time.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for giving or offering a different perspective on the ground in Iran, which is something that the mainstream media would never do. And the name of my podcast is Twice Told Tales Podcast. It's a YouTube channel and a podcast.
Thanks so much. We certainly appreciate it, Tara, for sharing your time with us. And that is our show. Remember to always look outside your own box, as I like to say, because truths don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll look for you next time.